I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. And I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club. A daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Been like a few hundred thousand dollars in debt, I think I would have really been struggling. I think I really would have been like, oh my gosh, I can't spend money. I can't do this. I can't do that. But once I got to this really, you know, pie in the sky, weird, like, I don't even know what that looks like. Big yeah, a lot of zeros and some commas. It's so far away from reality. $1 million. My kids would come to me and say, well, you know, can we go to Disneyland? And I would go, well, I don't see why not.
Hey, welcome back to Everyone's Talking Money. I am your host, Shauna. It's so good to have you here for an episode that will hopefully lighten your mood a bit, seeing as it is tax day. I know, womp womp. This day always comes far too fast, especially if you are a side hustler or entrepreneur, or you own a business like myself. It's always an expensive day, but maybe for you, maybe you're getting a big tax refund, and for that, I am so thrilled for you. You know, money is complicated. This is a common human feeling about money that we all share. There's a lot to think about. How do you spend your money to reach your goals? Are you saving enough for retirement? What is it with all those investing acronyms? And how do you enjoy life through all the financial ups and downs? Well, our guest, comedian Paula Poundstone and host of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone podcast, knows a thing or two about life's financial ups and downs. Paula was in debt for, yes, $1 million and spent years climbing out of it.
I'm kind of excited because I'm $1 million in debt. Now, that's not the exciting part, but it does feel good just to say it. I'll tell you something about being $1 million in debt. Once you hit $1 million, it feels kind of good.
Yes, I know it's not a laughing matter to be in debt. However, I think we all need to embrace Paula's advice. Life will be tough. Life will throw you some curveballs. But ultimately, life is to be enjoyed, not spent chronically stressed out about money. In this episode, we talk about why money is so complicated, how Paula navigated being in debt, and her advice to find true happiness in your life. I laughed a lot during this conversation, so I hope it makes you smile as well. And just a quick note before we get into the episode, hey, are you a YouTube fan? Did you know that all of our episodes are now on YouTube, and soon we will be having video episodes as well? So come over and join us at YouTube. You can find us at Everyone's Talking Money, or just head to the link in the show notes. All right, let's start talking. I am super excited to see you again. You know, I think everybody listening will just look forward to this conversation. We're going to laugh. We're going to talk about money. My husband, who is actually the producer of the show, he was laughing for hours researching all sorts of things for us to talk about.
Yeah, oh, that's nice to hear. He probably, if he got a glance at my bank account, surely he was laughing.
He's a fan of your Snickers bit from a few many years ago.
Sure. Poking at you. You're not kidding.
Oh, yeah. So we played that one many times. I was on your show a couple months ago. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. We talked about the most complicated relationship in your life, which you said is your on-again, off-again affair with money. And you said you flat-out broke up with money. Tell us a little bit about this complicated relationship. Like, what inspired you to just tell money, you know what, I'm done with you?
Well, I'm not sure it was a choice. I mean, you know, the truth is the landscape for me is different now than it was years ago because of my job, because I work in theaters. My audience is generally, I have some younger people there, but oftentimes my audience is largely my age and older. And they are not stupid. And so when the virus, you know, ebbs and flows, you know, certainly in the immediate aftermath of the stay-at-home order, it was very hard to get audiences to come out. And so that, you know, that put a crimp in things. Yeah, a bit of a damper. And I don't want to kill the people that come to see me. I don't know if that's business or ethics. I don't know. But it's not like and remember in the beginning, I don't know if you went to any kind of, you know, entertainment place, but in the beginning, in the immediate aftermath of the stay-at-home order, when theaters were able to open up again, they did this. At that time, we were doing this thing where theaters were allowed to open up, but that people had to be seated with a certain amount of space in between one another.
Right.
And which does not really make for a great show because sort of energy wise, you know, you're not collecting that energy together. So, yeah. And I was clawing my way through those shows, which were hard to do to begin with, and making pennies on the dollar for it. So I'm not sure that I turned my back on my relationship with money so much as money just kind of went away.
Yeah, I mean, do you think we all share these kind of core feelings around money where we're afraid to talk about money, or there's this like just general level of anxiety around money? Or do you think there are some people out there that just feel like they've got it all together when it comes to money?
Oh, I'm sure there are people who feel like they have it all together. I went through a long period. I mean, now when my accountants send me, you know, statements, I forget what it's called now, but the thing where they tell you, you know, how much you made and how much you spent. And it's never a happy story, but for years they would send papers and send papers. You know, I had like literally stacks of these papers that I had gotten sent from my accountants. I never looked at them because I just felt like, you know what, when I can't pay my bills anymore, someone will say something to me, right?
They'll like,
they'll let me know. Like, you know, it's not like the power company is going to leave the lights on because they're a fan. I felt like it doesn't do me any good at all to look at this stuff when there's nothing I can do about it. And the answer is no, it didn't. So eventually, I think while I was writing my book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, I did a chapter on getting organized. And somewhere within the getting organized chapter, A, I got rid of all those papers because I would save them. I just wouldn't look at them. And B, I made myself sort of engage in that again. And I can't tell you that it's made any difference one way or the other, knowing the, you know, I mean, I've talked to financial experts before. It doesn't matter. It doesn't influence whether, because I have a job. I don't have any skills. That's what I'm trying to say. If I didn't do this job of telling my little jokes in theaters, then the next thing that I could do is on a whole different financial plane. You know what I mean? So it's this, you know, it's this or a salad bar. Those are my choices because I have a background in salad bar and pancakes. I have a background in pancakes.
Ooh, all right. Well, okay, that's a couple skills. Salad bar, pancakes.
Yeah, yeah. I when I was 18, I worked the graveyard shift at the International House of Pancakes in Orlando, Florida. And, you know, it's going to surprise you. So cross this off your dream list. You don't make a lot of money in that. I kept my my money in. Okay, you're probably too young to remember this, but there was a nylon, you know, like a pantyhose company called Legs, and it was LEGGS, I think it was, and they came in a plastic egg. That's right, and that was like a big promotional thing. It was brilliant, and so I had to wear pantyhose to be, and this is in the days where you had to wear service shoes and, of course, the IHOP uniform. And I had to invest in a pair of, you had to wear pantyhose, but there was no rule that they couldn't have runs in them. So trust me, I wore the same pantyhose the whole time I worked there, regardless of the condition that they were in. But I kept the legs egg because that's what I kept my money in.
I like that. Yeah. Your story of your accountants and all of these documents, it reminds me, I probably have shared this story so many times on this podcast, but even as a money expert, I have a hard time looking at money. For years, I used to get my ATM receipts. Remember when you used to drive up to the bank? And I would fold them into some sort of like origami shape. The origami crane was my favorite. And I would shove them in the crevice of my wallet and I would never look at them again. They would go straight from that origami shape to the trash. And it's crazy to me because it really speaks to, I think, the emotional reaction that we have around money is that there was money in my bank account. But for me, just seeing those numbers created this sense of just fear and panic. And so I would do everything just to not look at those numbers.
I hear you. I mean, so much of it feels beyond my control. I think that's part of it. It used to be that I went to my accountant and, it's not like I went there a lot. There was nothing to go there for. But when it was tax time, you know, and I paid taxes in, within a couple of years, I paid taxes in 50 states. So it's not like I can do it myself. I probably couldn't do it myself anyways. It's just not my area. I tend to gloss over right away when, you know, but it used to be that I would go to the accountant and he would show me like, okay, here's how much, you know, here's how much you made, you know, here's how much you spent, here's what's left over, whatever that leftover number was. I mean, whatever it was, that's what I owed in taxes. So every time I went to the accountant, I came away flat broke, not in debt. That's good, but flat broke. Well, yeah, eventually that does. it is a bit of a cattle prod. But it always felt like it has nothing to do with how hard I worked. I'm not sure it had anything to do with how much money I spent. There was just something oddly sort of evil magic about it, whatever it was. And by the way, I like to pay taxes because I like the idea of doing my share. I want our public schools to be good. I'd like the potholes to be filled. I want the fire truck to come when somebody needs all. I want all those government services that are there to help make our lives better. I want those services to be there, and I am happy to pay my share. But it was damn curious that it was always whatever I made.
It's like head scratcher moment. Like, how is this possible?
Yeah. And it didn't, because I did whatever the formula was, it still seems a little strange to me. I did have an accountant before these people that I've had for, you know, I don't know, probably, I don't know, 35, 40 years, probably the people I'm with now. But before that, I had a guy. And same thing, I always felt so distant from the process that I never really looked very carefully at the papers that they gave me. But I did have a guy that, you know, I paid him just to do my taxes. He wasn't my accountant. He was just a guy I paid to do my taxes. And I happened to, the only number on the whole thing that I cared about was how much I made in contributions. How much I paid in charitable contributions was of interest to me. And I happened to notice in like a 3-year period that he kept using the same number. And so I did fire that guy. I caught him red-handed. He was like, oh, yeah. Okay. But I wanted, you know, and I knew it wasn't the correct number because I had some sense of what I did in charitable contributions, but I had no sense of anything else. Yeah, and there comes to be a period of time where you just feel like it's the ocean washing over you, and it's like when you're okay. It's like when you go to the beach and you say, "Okay, I'm not going to get wet. I'm just going to put my feet in the water, right?" And then a big wave hits you. You're like, "All right, I'm in." That's sort of how like the financial stuff eventually just covers you, and you're like, "I no plan means anything." I'm sure this isn't the right attitude that I'm having.
It's probably a very popular one, though. You know, I think the thing about money that's so crazy is we do it on the show, but we don't go around talking about these things. So it feels very isolating. We feel like nobody else is in our situation or shares our thoughts or our feelings about money. And so we feel like literally the worst person in the world.
Yes. I remember one night at the dinner table when I was growing up, my brother asked my father a question about his income, and my brother got in trouble. Like, that was a thing.
Really?
Yeah, you just weren't supposed to ask about that or talk about that, which is funny because my father was very secretive in that way about that sort of thing. And my brother just sort of stumbled into it. I don't think he knew that that was some sort of social rule. But I don't think our family was unique about that. I think this idea that, you know, that's for the adults and the kids don't ask, and it's somehow it's like asking a woman her age. It's rude. So that was that. And we never, you know, never asked them a question about it again. But at the same time, if something cost too much, just, I mean, having no idea what my parents' budget was, if something costs too much when you went to buy it, well, they'd be all over you about it. You know, so there was this sort of, on the granular level, we knew that we weren't supposed to spend, you know, a lot of money. And of course, a lot is relative. But we weren't allowed to know what the ceiling was. We weren't allowed to put those daily ideas into some sort of a budgetary context. That was considered rude.
And I think that's how most of us get screwed up around money. You know, we look at the science and the data, and they show that between the ages of 0 and 7 are when our money personality and our money habits are set. And so,
you know, you said whatever, that when you were on my podcast.
I know.
And I have not recovered from it. So not because of me, but because of my kids. I did not explain money good to them, in part because I personally don't have really a handle on it. And, you know, as parents, we tend to use our own experience to tell kids, like, you know, how it's going to go. And the truth is, my experience is not a good template for my kids for a couple of reasons. One reason is societally things have changed a lot. How a kid pays for their, you know, apartment now, I have zero idea, because it's so expensive. Whereas when I first started out as a young adult, I shared an apartment in Boston with like 3 other girls, and I worked at a salad bar restaurant, which is where that expertise comes from. I worked at a salad bar restaurant. I think I was bussing tables for a living. I believe I was paid something like $3 an hour. And then I was tipped by the waitresses, but I usually gave the tips back because that didn't feel right to me. So basically I lived on whatever the income was of $3 an hour and I felt like I was living the life of Riley. I could still afford, I forget what my share of the rent was. I can't remember anymore, but it couldn't have been much. I could afford to go to the movies every so often. I could occasionally, I mean, I didn't cook very much. So I guess I mostly ate at the restaurant. That was important.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Lots of salads, right?
I always tried to encourage my kids to get restaurant jobs. I go, you'll never go hungry. But none of them did. So I don't know how they've done what they've done. I really don't. I think it's just not the same landscape. And then the other thing is, like, I'll be like, well, let me show you how to write a check. People don't do it. I still write checks, but other people don't. I don't know why. It was a perfectly, I don't get all the thing with the money on your flat thing. That makes zero sense to me. I like cash anyways. I'm very happy with cash.
Yeah, cash is good, right? I mean, that old saying, cash is king. That's never gonna, you know, no one has ever died saying, you know what, I feel really miserable. I had too much cash.
Yeah. Well, now what they, and okay. All right. I give myself credit on this one financial thing, and I don't know where you stand on this, but the whole cryptocurrency thing never made sense to me. And I always felt like that is just, you know, this idea that money doesn't grow on trees, I really did. That I was able to take in pretty well. You know, this, I mean, just again, I want to trade in cash or, I would at some point be willing to go back to pelts.
We're going to go way back, right?
Yeah. I mean, I like
agree,
animals.
Though. I think I think life might be a little bit easier, or a lot of it easier. I don't know. Maybe that's like a pie in the sky wish. I don't know. I feel like everything's just gotten more and more complicated.
I remember learning one time on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me that somebody had done a study that found that counting money, the act of counting cash, gave people a happy chemical release in their brain, whether it was their cash or not, which I was sort of fascinated by. Like, wow. No, I would feel that it would.
The dopamine. Yeah. Like the physical, tangible holding money. Yeah. And I rarely have cash in my wallet, but I know when I take it out to pay for something, it's a different experience. Like it feels different. And it's probably because it's tangible versus you swipe your credit card and there's not a sense of there's not even a sense of loss necessarily because it just feels made up.
Well, you're probably more in touch with what you're doing than I am, but when I used a credit card, I remember when I was struggling more, at one point I was $1 million in debt, not bank debt, personal debt. And there's something funny about that number, a million. And that's, by the way, around about $1 million. If I had been like a few $100,000 in debt, I think I would have really been struggling. I think I really would have been like, oh my gosh, I can't spend money. I can't do this. I can't do that. But once I got to this really, you know, pie in the sky, weird, like, I don't even know what that looks like. A lot of zeros and some commas. It's so far away from reality. $1 million. My kids would come to me and say, well, you know, can we go to Disneyland? And I would go, well, I don't see why not. Because I'm never going to be able to pay off $1 million. What's the difference? You know, like now it's like when I was trying not.
Now I'm $1,200,000.
Right.
In
yeah.
Debt.
Yeah.
Who cares,
come and get
right?
me, coppers. But again, it wasn't debt through a bank or that I owed to a company. It was personal debt. And so I did, you know, hack away at it for years. And although I still have some, it's not a million anymore. But there is something about when it gets that big, you just kind of throw your hands up. Right. So, yeah.
Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I
am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC.
All right, Paula, it's time to play Your Relationship with Money Is. So first question, what is a cartoon character that accurately depicts your relationship with money?
Okay, he's not a cartoon character, but I think... maybe this is too bleak, but I think it's the Monopoly guy when his pockets are out. And also the random quality of that you pick a card or you land somewhere based on the roll of the dice. That just sort of stuff coming from out of nowhere. Like, how the hell did that happen? What do you mean I owe the bank $200? How did that happen? That kind of random quality of the guy in the with his pockets out in the bank. And he probably has a name, but I've never known what it was.
All right. Question number two. Take us into your inner money thoughts. Is there a central thought or theme that plays on repeat for you?
Oh, really flawed. A lot of really flawed money thoughts. Like sometimes I do that thing where suddenly I'll pinch pennies over something that matters not. And yet I still have a storage space.
All right. I know you like to collect things like neckties and Pez dispensers, but what is a guilty money splurge that you have that you're never given up?
In the old days, it was, I guess it still is. Videotapes and DVDs, which I do still buy. I mean, I don't buy videotapes anymore, obviously, but I buy DVDs still because I love watching what I want to watch without commercials, without flipping around, and yeah. Yeah. And being able to, take it in when I'm ready. On the road, recently, I've fallen into the trap of watching TV, like actual TV. And, you know, half your night goes to the commercials. And if I hear those animated bears talking about wiping their butts one more time.
True.
Enough already. Thank you. We know what it's for. Thank you.
All right. Last question. If money were a person and you could tell it one thing, what would that be?
That would be it. Come here, Tech. Come here. Can you come here a minute?
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Talking about money is hard. You know this already. All over the world, people are taught to never talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. On 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning from executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines, host and financial conversationalist Carl Richards, we'll remove money from that list by having frank, funny, and often difficult conversations about money, the kind we're all told not to have, with guests from all walks of life. In each episode, Carl will invite a new guest to answer the question, what does money mean to you? Their answers will reveal much more than their attitudes about money, spanning revelations about identity, community, faith, family, and the true meaning of wealth. Tune in to hear deep conversations about money and the meaning it holds in our lives. You can find 50 Fires on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Karina Bemisterfer, host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast. Yes, you heard me right, daily true crime. Every day, Morning Cup of Murder tells you a straightforward, short-form story about murder, true crime, cold cases, disappearances, serial killers, cults, and more. And I do that all in under 15 minutes. With over 3 years of stories and over 20 million downloads, the Morning Cup of Murder podcast has become a staple of so many people's daily routines. So why not add it to yours? Stream Morning Cup of Murder everywhere you listen to podcasts. And remember, stay safe.
What keeps you going in those leaner times? Like, in when you're staring down that type of debt, I mean, how do you keep yourself just kind of moving forward?
Well, at that time, I had, you know, little kids. And so, you know, life was about taking care of them and making sure that they had what they need. And I was, and nobody was banging down my door. People who had loaned me money, nobody was saying, you know, if you don't pay this or anything like that. And it was all from people who had substantially more than me. So I was very, very lucky in that way. So there was that. But then the other thing, especially now that the kids aren't home anymore, I do just put my head down and work, I because that's all I can do, right? And again, beyond that, when bad news comes knocking at the door, it'll have to come knocking at the door because I just put my head down and work. And that seems to work out pretty good. I very much like... I have some eye problems, and I'm trying the goal of the eye doctor, as he tells me, is for me to outlive my eyes, you know, as opposed to my eyes going before me, which would create some, you know, and that's my feeling with my debt. I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to keep hacking away at it. And it is beginning to look, after all these years, like I will outlive my debt. And I like that idea. I will have everybody paid off. Yeah. So I mean, I don't want a grave or anything like that anyways, but You know, I do like the idea that if there was a gravestone, you know, it would say, she paid us back. she was good to her word. She paid us back. You know, you can make a deal with this woman with a handshake. There was no, how about this? There was no litigation. There was no.
Those are great words.
If I was in.
To put on a tombstone.
Yeah. If I was in Dickensian times, I would be in the, what do they call it? You know, where they send the paupers, where the debtor, I'd be in debtor's prison.
Debtor's prison, yeah. Well, you know, you cover so many different topics on your podcast. Obviously, I was on your show. We talk about money. You talk about love and career and social media anxiety. And
by the way, how can you do a podcast about money when one of the biggest money drains that there is on the planet is doing a podcast? The two things don't go together at all.
Well, I'm 9.5 years in. I'm 9.5 years in 1,100 and some odd episodes, and we have made money, pretty good money. So,
wow,
it's possible.
Wow. Okay, listeners, pay attention. Yeah, pay attention to that because that's rare. Congratulations. Yeah. Generally speaking, podcasting is very much like the gold rush. The people who made the money were the people who sold the tools. You know, they sold the pans. They weren't the people out there digging and scraping. And that's really what podcasting is now, because there's literally millions of podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, when I started in 2015, I think there were only 400,000 podcasts, which of course is a lot of podcasts. But now there's, I think, you know, close to 4 million. Yeah. So, yeah, I remember a couple months in when we launched the show, one day I got all of these like texts and phone calls for friends, and they were like, oh my God, check the top podcast chart. And I was like number 2 in all of the podcasts above like Rachel Maddow.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I was just like, how is this even possible? Because I talk about money. But, you know, it's a crazy world. Do you get the same feelings from podcasting that you get from stand-up comedy and being on a stage?
No. It's a different thing entirely. But nonetheless, it has rewards. I don't mean financial. It's been fun to be in a setting in a way without a live audience in front of me, because I can do stuff that I would literally be too shy to do on stage in front of an audience.
What?
Goofy voices mostly. Years ago, because we've been on, I think, for 5 years. Years ago, I just felt like I needed a way to fight back against my partner, Adam. And so, you know, I didn't want to turn to him and say, like, you know, what a stupid thing to say, or to say. Sometimes he'll mansplain things to me, that sort of thing, you know. And I didn't want to sort of constantly take that route of interaction with him. So one day it dawned on me, it wasn't that I wanted to tell him that, you know, don't mansplain stuff to me. It was that I wanted someone who appeared to be despicable to tell Adam that was great what he was doing. do you see what? So I just had this idea. So we're sitting in a studio together the way we already had for, I don't know, several months at least at that point, because we used to be in the studio, now we're at home. And we're having an interaction the way we always did. And, you know, there's no live audience. Everything is taped. And I just looked at Adam and I said, Adam, I forget what he said to me. He said some mansplaining thing. And I said, Adam, answer the phone. And he looked at me like I had two heads. And he was like, what phone? And I go, just answer the phone. And so eventually he comes around and he goes, hello. And then I go, hey, Adam, it's me, Mike Boom Boom Bonifay. Man, I love your show. You are so great. I'm so glad You put that ball of pound stone in her place. You're fantastic, man. Hey, listen, we're going to hang out after the game next week, okay? Gotta go. Bye. That was the first one. And then, and by the way, Adam Felber got it right away.
Wait, what was his reaction?
I think he was a little bit baffled, but nonetheless, he understood that if he said something that Mike Boom Boom Bonifant liked, that it was probably not a good thing to say. So after that, and eventually there became all these other silly, just stupid characters. And eventually when I say to Adam, answer the phone, he'll go, no. He'll go, do I have to? Yeah, answer the phone. So Mike Boom Boom Bonifant loves Adam Felber, wants to hang out after the game with him. After watching the game, neither one play the game, but they want to hang out after watching the game. There was a point to all this. Anyway, so that kind, you know, just doing silly stuff like that, which I just would never have the nerve to do with an audience in front of me. And that's been really fun. And the other thing is, we were not on the air. I don't even know what you call it. We were podcasting probably for a year or so before COVID hit. And everybody was relegated to their homes, of course, or most of us were. And a lot of issues of people feeling isolated. And we started to hear from audience members, at our website and that sort of thing, how helpful it was to have this podcast that they enjoyed listening to during this really depressing time. And, you know, it would be hard to give that up.
Yeah, I know. It's such a strange, interesting medium, but it's so fantastic. I think the fact that so many people get to, you know, bring a voice to a subject is so great. You know, I want to ask you about this quote from your book. It makes me laugh, and I think it should be on a fortune cookie. You say, deep-rooted happiness may require a sense of purpose. If I don't feel like I'm some small way contributing to the greater good, holding on to that happiness is like carrying water in my hands. So I'm curious, do you have like a daily thing or something you do that makes you happy, that makes you feel this kind of level of happiness?
Well, I try to make sure, excuse me. I try to make sure that I've done something. And sometimes, by the way, it's very, very small, that contributes to the greater good on a daily basis. And, you know, by the way, whether that makes me happy or not, and generally it does when I reflect on it, but whether it does or not, I would still consider that important. But one of the things that I discovered while writing my book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, which is, it's a comedy book, but it's a series of experiments doing things that I or other people thought would make me happy. Every chapter is a different experiment. And the experiments themselves, though not thoroughly scientific, were thoroughly sincere. And so I really was genuinely doing this thing. And I'm trying to think of what the examples were. One of them was, you know, some, you know, form of public service kind of thing, like charitable stuff. One was fitness. One was getting organized. And by the way, think of all the television stuff that came out of that concept. Not my concept of getting organized, but for, you know, in the old days on magazines that appealed to women, you know, when they referred to the big O, they were talking about orgasm. But within the last, say, 20 years, the big O is getting organized. Everyone dreams of getting organized. I'm not even sure that it's possible, but it is a dream that most people have.
Women have given up the fantasy of the original O, and they've gone straight to, I just want to be organized.
Honestly, if I had to choose between the two, I definitely would go with organized. I wouldn't moan over it, but I definitely would. I think that's longer lasting. So one of the things that I found doing my experiments was that if you can know what things, and there are lists, there are scientific lists of what activities actually, what you can do to instigate happy chemical releases in your brain. I have it around here somewhere. There's a great list. I sometimes talk about it on my podcast, and we've posted it on our page before. Because if you know that list, why not use it? Right? It's
great.
Great. If it's counting money, by God, grab some money and count. But one of the things, one of the most powerful things was the Get Fit experiment. And I was so hoping it wouldn't be that. I was so hoping it was, that it was, you know, and there are many things, but that is one of them that's pretty reliable. I was so hoping it was, you know, sitting in a chair and eating Doritos. Turns out isn't at all.
So do you still exercise?
I do. Not as often as would probably be helpful, but I do. I started a thing that I call my improvements. I started that during the stay-at-home order. And what I discovered, I used to work out for the purpose of my book. I started working out with a Taekwondo guy. And, you know, he would have me do stuff until I was literally on the verge of crying. And I'm like, okay, it's really hard to motivate yourself to do exercise if it means you're going to, you know, almost throw up or, you know, or be like, oh my God, I can't do this. Like that doesn't, it's very hard to motivate yourself to do that. So when I would, you know, when everything shut down and I couldn't go to that guy anymore, I just started, I thought, you know, I can't let myself go to Seed. So I had the goal of doing real push-ups. Because even when I was working out with that guy, I did push-ups on my knees when we were doing like that part of the workout. And so I had this goal of doing real push-ups. That was the whole, you know, universe of the goal. And people told me that you could do push-ups leaning on a wall, which I thought was really interesting.
Yes.
You move your feet back and it becomes more and more challenging. So I started with these very, very small things. And had very low expectations of myself in terms of how many of each of these things that I did. I can't remember. I probably started with 10. And my idea was that every week I would increase my routine by one of each of these things. I got up and I used to do them twice a day. Okay, that fell away where I finally just did them once a day. But my point is, when I set these kind of low expectations, it sounds sort of stupid, but what happens is, and I'm not a fitness trainer, I'm not an expert, I have no, you know, don't do something and then tell me, you know, it didn't work, because that's not my fault, because I'm not a professional. I have no training to tell me this. This is all, I just thought, this is what I'm going to do. First of all, it's easier to do if I know I'm not going to do it until I'm going to, you know, I'm about to cry. And as I increase, I do feel better because it feels fantastic to get, you know, to just increase my numbers. And I'm not dreading it as much as I used to. That's the thing. To get yourself to work out at home is really hard to do, which is why people join gyms.
Exactly.
Which is why they
just
end up losing
like money, right?
It's exactly why they end up losing money, is because there's no way to offset that. I don't know. Now I stopped for a while and I started again a while ago, and I only increase that week if I'm feeling strong enough to do so. So currently I'm at, and I finally got to real push-ups, by the way. Currently I do 34 real push-ups, and then I sort of dressed up the workout with several other. I do a thing called Russian twists. I do burpees, and by the way, I will not increase the burpees beyond 10 because life's too short. They're so horrible. People write to me all the time. They go, what's a burpee? Because I post what I do online. I go, it is the devil's sperm. That's what it is.
Well, gosh, we have talked about so much, you know, coming back to this topic of money. I mean, we're joking about it here, but we know how stressful it is. Yeah, I would love, you know, do you have like a motto or a joke or just something that can get us, you know, maybe out of the realm of being so freaked out about money and, you know, just to feel a little bit lighter about the subject?
You know, I'm pretty bare bones the way I work now. The way I run my life is pretty bare bones. I will say that some of the things that I stopped doing in terms of financial expenditures, I don't miss. I obviously work in theaters, tell my little jokes for a living, but I want people to come to my shows because it's really fun. But having said that, I'm going to say something that totally undercuts my career and my income, which is this. I never in my life have laughed harder than in the basement of the Ross's house when I was growing up, when I was a kid. Just, you know, hanging out with the kids in the neighborhood. In the Ross's house, we played a lot of hide and seek, that sort of thing. And it didn't cost a penny. I mean, I encourage people to come out to shows, partly because it benefits me, partly because I do believe it benefits them. But you know what? And being a part of an audience is an important thing, whether it's to see me or see somebody else or see a dance show or see this thing of being a part of a collection of people. Having an emotional response to something really does make you feel more like a human being. I think that we take that for granted. But having said that, you're never going to laugh harder than in the Ross's bedroom. In the Ross's basement. So, you know, maybe in the Ross's bedroom. But so make sure that you stay connected to people so that you can have that. And it doesn't cost a thing.
I think the thing I admire the most about Paula is that she's always willing to talk about hard things in life and laugh about them. Personally, I know I'm a pretty serious person, and maybe Paula has it figured out. Hard times are going to come. Your money is going to go up and down. But keeping a good perspective on it all is the only way to get through the day. If you want to hear more about Paula, you can check out her podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, on any podcast player. And yeah, check out the episode that I did with Paula recently where I talked about money trauma. You can also find her tour. If you want to see her in person, I will link all of that in the show notes, as well as links to our amazing sponsors who make this show happen. So please go over and give them some love. I will see you back here in a few days for a brand new episode.